Chapter 40 Wolf Brother. Elaine's captors looked at Birgitta stunned, and Elaine took the moment to jerk her body sideways. She rolled to her knees. Her pregnancy made her awkward, but she was hardly incapable. The medallion that Melar had been holding against her slipped to the ground, and she found the glow of Sidar awaiting her grasp. She filled herself with the power and held her belly. Her children stirred within. Elaine wove flows of air, knocking her captors backward. Nearby, Elaine's guards, having rallied, burst through Melar's soldiers. A few stopped when they saw Birgitta.
"Keep fighting, you daughters and sons of goats!" Birgitta yelled, loosing arrows at the mercenaries. "I might be dead, but I'm still your bloody commander, and you will obey orders!"
That spurred them into motion. The rising mist curled upward, fogging the battlefield. It seemed to glow faintly in the darkness. In moments, Elaine's channeling, Birgitta's bow, and her guard's work sent the remnants of Melar's dark friend mercenaries running. Birgitta dropped 6 of them with arrows as they fled.
"Birgitta," Elaine said through tears, "I'm sorry."
"Sorry?"
Birgitta turned to her.
"Sorry? Why do you mourn, Elaine? I have it all back. My memory has returned."
She laughed.
"It is wonderful! I don't know how you stood me these last few weeks. I moped worse than a child who'd just broken her favorite bow."
Oh, light."
Elaine's insides told her she'd still lost her warder. And the pain of the bond breaking was not a rational thing. It didn't matter that Birgitta stood before her.
"Perhaps I should bond you again?"
"It would not work,"
Birgitta said, waving her hand with a dismissive gesture. "Are you hurt?"
"Nothing but my pride."
"Lucky for you, but luckier that the horn was blown when it was."
Elaine nodded.
"I'm going to join the other heroes," Birgitta said. "You stay here and recover."
"Light burn that," Elaine said, forcing herself to her feet. "I'm not bloody staying behind now. The babes are all right. I'm riding."
"Elaine."
"My soldiers think I'm dead," Elaine said. "Our lines are breaking, our men dying. They have to see me to know that there is still hope. They won't know what this mist means. If they have ever needed their queen, this is the moment. Nothing short of the Dark One could stop me from returning now."
Birgitta frowned.
"You're not my warder any longer," Elaine said, "but you're still my friend. Will you ride with me?"
"Stubborn fool.
I'm not the one who just refused to stay dead."
"Together?"
"Together,"
Birgitta said, nodding. Avienda pulled up short, listening to new howls. Those didn't sound quite like wolves. The tempest at Shale Ghoul continued. She didn't know which side was winning. Everywhere lay bodies, some ripped apart by wolves, others still smoldering from attacks of the One Power. The storm winds whipped and raged, though no rain fell, and waves of dust and gravel washed across her. She could feel channeling from the Pit of Doom, but it was like a quiet pulse, as opposed to the storm that had been the cleansing. Rand. Was he all right? What was happening? The white clouds brought in by the Windfinders churned among the jet-black storm clouds above, swirling together in a massive, writhing pattern above the mountain peak. From what she'd heard of the Windfinders, they had withdrawn up Shale Ghoul to a ledge, far above the cave entrance, still working the bowl of winds. They were at a breaking point. More than 2/3 of their numbers had collapsed from exhaustion. Soon the storm would consume everything. Avienda prowled through the maelstrom, seeking the source of those howls. She didn't have any other channelers with whom to link, now that Rafaela had left to join the Dragonsworn's last stand at the cavern. Out here in the valley, different groups killed one another, shifting back and forth. Maidens, wise ones, Siswiamen, Trollocs,
fades, and wolves. Hundreds of them had joined the battle so far. There were also some Demani, Tyrans, and Dragonsworn, though most of those fought near the path up to Rand. Something hit the ground beside her, crooning, and she lashed out before thinking. The Drakkar burst into flames like a stick dried by 100 days of sunlight. She took a deep breath, looking around her. Howls! Hundreds upon hundreds of them. She broke into a run toward those howls crossing the valley floor. As she did so, someone emerged from the dusty shadows. A wiry man with a gray beard and golden eyes. He was accompanied by a small pack of wolves. They glanced at her, then turned back in the direction they'd been going. Avienda stopped. Golden eyes.
"Ho! He who runs with wolves!" she called at the man. "Have you brought Perrin Ebarra with you?"
The man froze. He acted like a wolf, careful yet dangerous.
"I know of Perrin Ebarra," he called back, "but he is not with me. He hunts in another place."
Avienda walked closer to the man. He watched her, wary, and several of his wolves growled. It did not seem they trusted her or her kind much more than they trusted Trollocs.
"These new howls," she called over the wind. "They are from your friends?"
"No," the man said, eyes growing distant.
"No, not any longer. If you know of women who can channel Aiel, you should bring them now."
He moved off toward the sounds, his pack running with them. Avienda followed him, keeping her distance from those wolves, but trusting their senses above her own. They reached a small rise in the floor of the valley, one that she'd seen Aitaralda use on occasion for overseeing the defense of the pass. Pouring out of the pass were scores of dark shapes. Black wolves, the size of small horses. They loped across the rock, and though they were out of her sight, Avienda knew they were leaving footprints melted into the stone. Hundreds of wolves attacked the darker shapes, leaping on their backs but were thrown free. They didn't seem to be doing much good. The man with the wolves growled.
"Dark hounds?" Avienda shouted.
"Yes," he called back, bellowing to be heard over the tempest. "This is the Wild Hunt, the worst of their kind. These cannot fall to mortal weapons. The bites of common wolves will not harm them. Not permanently."
"Then why do they fight?"
The wolf brother laughed.
"Why do any of us fight? Because we must try to win somehow. Go! Bring Aes Sedai, some of those Ashaman, if you can find them. These creatures will roll over your armies as easily as a wave over pebbles."
The man took off down the slope, his wolves joining him. She understood why they fought. They might not be able to kill the Dark Hounds, but they could slow the creatures, and that was their victory here, buying Rand enough time to do what he needed to. She turned, alarmed, running to gather the others. The sensation of a powerful channeler wielding Sidar nearby stopped her dead. She spun, looking toward the source of the sensation. Grendahl was there, up ahead, just barely visible. She calmly sent deadly weaves at a line of defenders of the stone. She had collected a small group of women, Aes Sedai, wise ones, and a few guards. The women knelt around her and had to be feeding her their power, considering the strength of the weaves she unleashed. Her guards were 4 Aiel men with black veils, not red, under compulsion for certain. Avienda hesitated, wavering. What of the Dark Hounds? "I have to take this chance," she thought. She wove, releasing a ray of blue light into the sky, the sign she, Amis, and Cadswain had agreed upon. That, of course, alerted Grendahl. The Forsaken spun on Avienda and lashed out with fire. Avienda dodged, rolling. A shield came next, trying to cut Avienda off from the source. She desperately pulled in as much of the one power as she could hold, drawing it through the turtle brooch. Cutting a woman off with a shield was like trying to snip a rope with shears.
The thicker the rope, the more difficult it was to cut. In this case, Avienda had taken in enough Sidar to rebuff the shield. She gritted her teeth, spinning weaves of her own. Light, she hadn't realized how tired she was. She almost slipped, the threads of the one power threatening to drift from her control. She drove them into place by force of will and released a weave of air and fire, although she knew that those captives included friends and allies. They would rather die than be used by the shadow, she told herself, as she dodged another attack. The ground exploded around her and she dove to the ground. No, keep moving! Avienda leaped to her feet and ran. That saved her life, as lightning began to rain down behind her, its might sprawling her to the ground again. She came up bleeding from several cuts on her arm and started making weaves. She had to drop them as a complex weave came near her. Compulsion. If that seized her, Avienda would become another of the woman's thralls, forced to lend her strength to overthrowing the light. Avienda wove earth into the ground in front of her, throwing up chips of rock, dust, smoke. Then she rolled away, seeking a hollow in the ground, peeking out carefully. She held her breath and did not channel. The whipping winds cleared the diversion she'd created. Grendel hesitated in the middle of the field. She could not sense Avienda, who had earlier placed upon herself the weave that masked her ability. If she channeled, Grendel would know, but if she did not, she would be safe. Grendel's Aiel thralls stalked outward, their veils up, searching for Avienda. Avienda was tempted to channel right then and there, to end their lives. Any Aiel she knew would thank her for that. She stayed her hand. She didn't want to give herself away. Grendel was too strong. She could not face the woman alone. But if she waited... A weave of air and spirit attacked Grendel, trying to cut her off from the source. The woman cursed, spinning. Cadswain and Amis had arrived.
"Stand! Stand for Andor and the Queen!"
Elaine galloped through groups of pikemen now in disarray, her hair streaming behind her, shouting with a power-aided voice. She held aloft a sword, though the light only knew what she would do with it if she had to swing it. Men turned as she passed. Some were cut down by Trollocs as they did so. The beasts were pushing through the defenses, reveling in the broken lines and the slaughter.
"My men are too far gone," Elaine thought. "Oh, light, my poor soldiers!"
The tale she saw was one of death and despair. The Andoran and Kyrian in pike formations had folded after taking horrible casualties. Now men held in little bunches, many scattering, scrambling for their lives.
"Stand!" Elaine cried. "Stand with your queen!"
More men stopped running, but they didn't go back to the fighting. What to do? Fight. Elaine attacked a Trolloc. She used the sword, despite just moments ago thinking that she'd be hopeless with it. She was. The boar-headed Trolloc actually looked surprised as she flailed at it. Fortunately, Birgitta was there and shot the beast in the forearm as it swung for Elaine. That saved her life, but still didn't let her kill the blasted thing. Her mount, borrowed from one of her guardsmen, danced around, keeping the Trolloc from cutting her down as she tried to stab it. Her sword didn't move in the direction she willed. The One Power was far more refined a weapon. She would use that if she had to, but she would rather fight for the moment. She didn't have to struggle long. Soldiers surrounded her, dispatching the beast and defending her from four others that had begun advancing on her. Elaine wiped her brow and pulled back. "What was that?" Birgitta asked, riding up beside her, then loosing an arrow at a Trolloc before it could kill one of the soldiers. "Ratliff's nails, Elaine! I thought I'd seen the extent of your foolishness." Elaine held up her sword. Nearby, men began to cry out.
"The Queen lives!" they yelled. "For Light and Andor, stand with the Queen!"
"How would you feel?" Elaine said softly. If you saw your queen trying to kill a Trolloc with a sword as you ran away...
I'd feel like I needed to bloody move to another country, Birgitta snapped, loosing another arrow. One where the monarchs don't have pudding for brains.
Elaine sniffed. Birgitta could say what she wished, but the maneuver worked. Like a bit of yeast, the force of men she'd gathered grew, expanding to either side of her and building a battle line. She kept the sword raised high, shouting, and after a moment of indecision, created a weave that made a majestic banner of Andor float in the air above her, the Red Lion to light the night. That would draw direct fire from Demondred and his channelers, but the men needed the beacon. She would fight off attacks as they came. They did not, as she rode down the battle lines, shouting words that gave hope to her men.
For light and Andor, your queen lives. Stand and fight.
Matt thundered forward across the top of the heights with the remains of a once great army pushing southwest. The Trollocs were massed ahead on his left side, the Sharn army ahead on the right. Facing the enemy were the heroes, Borderlanders, Caridin and his men, Ogier, Two Rivers archers, White Cloaks, Gil'danan and Maenners, mercenaries, Tinna and her dragonsworn refugees, and the band of the Red Hand, his own men. He remembered, within those memories that were not his, leading forces far grander, armies that were not fragmented, half-trained, wounded, and exhausted. But light help him, he had never been so proud. Despite all that had happened, his men took up the shouts of attack and threw themselves into the battle with renewed vigor. Demondred's death gave Matt a chance. He felt the armies surging, and through them flowed that instinctive rhythm of the battle. This was the moment he had been seeking. It was the card upon which to bet everything he had. 10-1 odds, still. But the Sharn army, the Trollocs and Fades, had no head. No general to guide them. Different contingents took conflicting actions as various Fades or Dreadlords tried to give orders. I'll have to watch those Sharans, Matt thought. They'll have generals who can reinstitute command. For now, he needed to hit hard, hit powerfully. Push the Trollocs and Sharans off the heights. Down below, the Trollocs filled the corridor between the bogs and the heights, pressing hard the defenders at the riverbed. Elaine's death had been a lie. Her troops had been in disarray. They had lost more than a third of their soldiers. But just as they were about to be routed by the Trollocs, she rode into their midst and rallied them. Now they were miraculously holding their lines despite being pushed back well into Shinaran territory. They could not resist much longer, though, with or without Elaine. More and more pikes on the front lines were being mobbed. Soldiers were falling all across the field, and her cavalries and the Aiel were working furiously, with increasing difficulty, to contain the enemy. Light, if I can push the shadow off these bloody heights into those beasts below, they'll fall all over each other.
Lord Cawthon!
Tinna shouted nearby. She leveled a bloody spear from horseback, pointing to the south. Light shone distantly toward the River Arranin. Matt wiped his brow. Was that? Gateways in the sky. Dozens of them. And through them poured Tohrakan in flight, carrying lanterns. A fiery flight of arrows launched at the Trollocs in the corridor. The Tohrakan, carrying archers, flew in formation over the ford and the corridor beyond. Over the battle, Matt heard sounds that must have made the enemy's blood run cold. Hundreds, maybe thousands, of animal horns blared out in the night their call to war. A thunderstorm of drums began to beat out a unified cadence that became louder and louder, and a rumble of footfalls made by an advancing army, man and animal alike, slowly approaching Poloth Heights in the dark. No one could see them in the pre-dawn blackness, but everyone on the battlefield knew who they were. Matt let out a whoop of joy. He could see the Seanchan movements playing out in his mind's eye now. Half their army would march directly north from the Arranin, joining with Elaine's harried army at the Mora to crush the Trollocs trying to force their way into Shinar. The other half would swing to the west around the bogs to the western side of the heights, crushing the Trollocs in the corridor from behind. Now the falling hail of arrows was accompanied by glowing lights popping into existence in the air. Demani, making more light for their army to see by, a display that would have done the Illuminators proud. Indeed, the ground shook as the massive Shanchan army marched across the field of Maralor. Thunder shattered the air off Matt's right flank on the heights. A deeper thunder. Talmanis and Aludra had mended the dragons and were firing directly from the cavern through gateways into the Sharan army. The pieces were almost all in place. There was one more bit of business that needed tending to before the final toss of the dice. Matt's armies pressed forward. Jer Grady fingered the letter from his wife, sent with Androl from the Black Tower. He couldn't read it in this darkness, but that didn't matter, so long as he could hold it. He'd memorized the words anyway. He watched this canyon, 10 or so miles to the northeast along the River Mora, where Cawthon had positioned him. He was well out of sight of the battlefield at Maralor. He didn't fight. Light it was hard, but he didn't fight. He watched, trying not to think of the poor people who had died trying to hold the river here. It was the perfect place for it. The Mora passed through a canyon here, where the shadow could stop the river. And so it had. Though the men Matt had sent had tried to fight the Dreadlords and the Sharans. What a fool's task that had been. Grady's anger smoldered at Cawthon. Everyone claimed that he was a good general. Then he went and did this. Well, if he was a genius, why had he sent 500 simple folk from a mountain village in Murindi to hold this river? Yes, Cawthon had also sent about 100 soldiers from the band, but that wasn't nearly enough. They died after holding the river for a few hours. There were hundreds upon hundreds of Trollocs and several Dreadlords at the River Canyon. Well, those folk had been slaughtered to a man. Light. There had been children in that group. The townsfolk and the few soldiers had fought well, defending the canyon for far longer than Grady would have thought possible. But then they'd fallen, and he'd been ordered not to help them. Well, now Grady waited in the darkness atop the canyon walls, hiding among a cluster of rocks. Distant from him, perhaps 100 paces, Trollocs moved by torchlight. The Dreadlords needed that to see. They, too, were atop the canyon walls, which gave them the height and position to look down on the river below, which had become a lake. The 3 Dreadlords had broken up large chunks of the canyon walls and created the barrier of rock that dammed the river. That had dried out the Mora at Maralor and let the Trollocs cross the river with ease. Grady could open that dam in a moment. A strike with the One Power would open it up and release the water from the canyon. So far, he hadn't dared. Cawthon had ordered him not to attack, but beyond that, he'd never be able to defeat 3 strong Dreadlords on his own. They'd kill him and dam the river again. He caressed his wife's letter, then prepared himself. Cawthon had ordered him to make a gateway at dawn to that same village. Doing so would reveal Grady. He didn't know the purpose of the order. The basin below was filled with water, covering the bodies of the fallen. "I guess now we'll do as well as any time," Grady thought, taking a deep breath. Dawn should be almost here, though the cloud cover kept the land dark. He'd follow his orders. Light burn him, but he would. But if Cawthon survived the battle downriver, he and Grady would have words. Stern ones. A man like Cawthon, born of ordinary folk, should have known better than to throw away lives. He took another deep breath, then began to weave a gateway. He opened it at that village the people had come from yesterday. He didn't know why he was to do this. The village had been depopulated to make up the group that had fought earlier. He doubted anybody remained. What had Matt called it? Hinder's Tap? People roared through the gateway, yelling, holding aloft cleavers, pitchforks, rusty swords. With them came more soldiers of the band, like the 100 who had fought here before. Except by the light of the Dreadlord's fires, the faces of those soldiers were the same as the ones who had fought here before. Fought here and died. Grady gaped as he stood up in the darkness watching those people attack. They were all the same. The same matrons, the same farriers and blacksmiths, the very same people. He'd watched them die, and now they were back again. The Trollocs probably couldn't tell one human from another, but the Dreadlords saw it, and understood that these people were the same people. Those three Dreadlords seemed stunned. One of the Dreadlords yelled out about the Dark Lord abandoning them. He started flinging weaves at the people. Those people just charged on, heedless of the danger, as many of their number were blown apart. They fell on the Dreadlords, hacking at them with farming implements and kitchen knives. By the time the Trollocs attacked, the Dreadlords were down. Now he could... Shaking off his stupor, Grady gathered his power and destroyed the dam blocking the canyon. And in doing so, he released the river.